Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. And we are live from Bismarck, North Dakota, about an hour from the main camp at Standing Rock. A UN advisory group is collecting testimony and documenting human rights abuses by law enforcement against Dakota Access Pipeline water protectors. Allegations include excessive use of force, with law enforcement rolling in with tanks, riot gear, using pepper spray, percussion grenades, rubber bullets, sound cannons, and firing shotguns into the crowd with so-called less lethal ammunition. In addition to unlawful arrests and mistreatment in jails, where people were held in kennel-like cages. During last Thursday's standoff between law enforcement and demonstrators, 141 people were arrested as construction workers moved closer to the Missouri River. That is the site water protectors here are fighting to protect. Five prominent legal and advocacy organizations have warned Energy Transfer Partners, that's the company that's building the $3.8 billion Dakota Access oil pipeline, Phillips 66, which will have a 25% stake in the pipeline, and lender Wells Fargo of their corporate duty. It's international law is intended to protect proponents of the Dakota Access Pipeline from human rights abuses. Today's guest, Jermaine Tremmel, is an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the United Nations. Her Lakota name is Lady Seen by Her Nations. She comes from the Hunkpapa group and is a great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. She grew up where Sitting Bull was killed on the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota, and Jermaine Tremmel joins me here in studio from Bismarck, North Dakota. Hi, Jermaine. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning.
Well, thank you for making the drive. You were right behind me when we were driving, and along the way, we passed massive piles of things that were taken from the frontline camp on Thursday. Just 2 minutes before they got there, police dumped all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I arrived, people were crying. Yes. Because a lot of sacred items were in those piles of things.
Yes.
Can you talk about how you felt when you saw that?
That's a real tough one, because when you see people hurt, you know, because sacred items, like there was pipes that were broken, feathers, eagle feathers that were smashed and broken. There was ties, tobacco ties. There was amulets, family amulets. Some of our people are horse people, and so they have amulets from their horses. Those are protections. And some of them are medicines for their people, from their ancestors. You know, it passed down through family. And many of those were taken and jerked off of them or pulled off of them when they were taken down. And so to have those just disrespected in that manner, and just like, I mean, when we went by, it was like garbage. They were in garbage bins, piled high, and people are standing there crying. People are standing there disoriented. They're angry. They don't know what to feel. They're in shock. It's all in shock. And just to know that people don't understand that these sacred items, what they mean to us. And it hurts. It hurts very badly. And this is something that I hate to say these things, but it's not going away. This is not going away. This is a memory that's endowed in the brain now, and in the heart. And this is a sad thing, because we treat our things with respect. We have reverence with that, just like we have reverence for our dead, you know, for our ancestors. And we don't go around, you know, marking our graves and all, because there's not supposed to be. There's a reason for that. And we don't talk about those things, but we're forced to tell, or we're forced to show, or we're forced. So here they come, and they destroy our his graves that have been there. We do migration prayers. Those prayers are solemn. Those prayers are for our people to continue to live. Every time we have something that happens to our people, a sickness comes through. Something attacks our community. our children see things or know things, there's something that's not right in our community, we go there and we pray to them. We ask them to help us. We ask them to guide us, to protect us, to take care of us. And they dug them up and destroyed them.
Hmm.
We don't do that. We don't go to their church and do that. We don't go to their place of worship and destroy it. You know, we don't do those things. We have reverence. These things that are very important to us, like we are who we are as Native communities, those things are sacred to us. Those remains are sacred to us. That ground is hallowed ground for us. And you have to know, as a Native person, your place in this worship. You know, and as I said, it hurt, and it you know, seeing our people hurt like this, that's uncalled for. You know, the way that they treated them, the way they treated online.
This morning, I interviewed two elders. One woman, Carol Masden, 70 in January.
Yes.
As she, when she heard about what was happening here, she got on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
She traveled on this. Days.
Yes.
She's been here camping.
Yes.
For 3 weeks. It's very cold.
Mm-hmm.
And when the wind kicks in, it's really cold.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the front line.
Yes.
She told me that as the police pushed people back, construction began immediately as people were being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Carol was arrested, again, almost 70. She was in jail for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Was taken from her. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Yes.
She fist bumped someone and was put in solitary for 3 hours. This woman is almost 70 years old. Can you, as a UN attorney, I mean, you're wearing a few different hats here because, you know, as you said, as a lawyer, a lot of people don't talk about prayer, but you're doing both here, right?
Yes.
First off, as a lawyer, a UN lawyer, what is your response to what you've heard from people who've been arrested? Let's talk about the elders first.
One of the things that, you know, when you're holding your pipe and you're praying, you're in a state of prayer. That's just like you're in the Vatican praying at the altar. Same thing, same concept. That's how holy it is. But what happened is these officers came and they were jerking, they were pulling and hitting. And some of the young youth, what they did was they didn't know what to do. They were angry and upset. They wanted to protect these grandmas and these grandpas. So they corralled, they put circles, and they huddled around those grandmas. And what they were doing was they were just jerking those pipes out of their hands and jerking the sage out of their hand. They would show their hands. They didn't have fists. They had hands of sage, and they were showing it to them, to the police officers, and they'd still hit them, and they'd still shove them. One of our young girls, she was standing next to her grandma, and she got hit with one of a baton in the stomach, you see. And the grandma went down. She was trying to, and all she could do was crawl to her grandma and cover her grandma because they kept hitting her. And she got a broke hand. We got youth that got broke arms. We got youth that are traumatized, that are walking around to them. And they broke down. It's hard for him. He's seen his grandma go down. His grandma saved him. He didn't want him to get in trouble, get arrested. She pushed him back. When she pushed him back, that's when the police came in and knocked her down, threw her down on the ground, and just held on her. There's been, my granddaughter was shot, you know.
She was on a horse.
She was shot with shrapnel. They had those so-called non-lethal weapons with shrapnel, metal shrapnel in it. That's just as bad as a bullet, especially with full G-forces. And she was running. They were chasing her, and she was on her horse. But we have racing horses. So he really took off, and that's when she said, Grandma, I felt those bullets going by me, those things going by me. And she said, all of a sudden, I felt a sting in my leg. And she said, I went further, she said, and I could hear that four-wheeler stopped and turned around. And the young boy behind her, he was already hit. His horse went down. And then the next thing you knew, she said she seen him fall, and he was hit in the back. She said they were shooting us in the back. We were running, and we weren't doing anything. We were running, and they were shooting at us. And she said, my leg, she said, I felt that sting. And she said, Ma, Grandma, I just had to run to the river. And she said, I remembered what you told me about how to save my a wound, and it was really bleeding. So I went and I put it on my leg. I put mud on my leg. And I went back, and he was laying on the ground. So I went back, and I helped him up, and we took off. And we got back, she said. But she said she looked all over her horse, but the horse, they went back to the horse. The horse was already dead. So we lost two horses in that. There's three of them that were wounded. And they brought the horses back yesterday. There was four horses that were taken and confines. And they said they had to give them shots and stuff. Well, we all take care of our horses. You know, that's nothing. They quarantined our horses. Why? Our horses are okay, but they quarantined them. And they did something to them because one of our horses came back. He couldn't be managed last night. We couldn't manage him. He kept rearing up. He was angry, rearing up. The owner came, tried to calm him down, talk to him, rub him down. We did ceremony. We put medicine on him. The female girl, her rider was shot off of her. And she's not doing well. Mm. She's very lethargic. She's not moving fast. She's just barely walking. So they're walking her. This is what happens when they know that their owners are hurt or the people are hurt. And what they did was they had to turn them loose this morning, but they're not running. They're just staying put. So these are things that are happening now. These sacred items are being affected. When they started coming and hitting and beating them and putting a perimeter around the protectors, the buffalo came. The buffalo came running, and they stood on the hillside. And they knew they were getting hurt because the grandmas and the grandfathers were already... They took a gentleman, one of our prestigious gentlemen with a war bonnet. They took him down with his feathers on him and arrested him. And a young youth, 14-year-old girl, they had to brutalize her, you know, and sit on her where they put their knee in the back of her head. I mean, that's what's uncalled for, the brutality. So all of this, what this tells me as a lawyer, this is what we call a forced genocide. In other words, you traumatize them. You use psychological warfare on them. You hurt them because we're not a type of people. We're peaceful people. But when you do this, this is a psychological genocide, it's called. And those things are very serious because there is no timeline. A psychologist really can't say for sure you're going to ever recover. So this goes into what they call now PTSD.
Right. I interviewed a young white woman yesterday, Angie Spector, who came to Standing Rock to offer trauma counseling. After she saw videos, she realized that women especially would need trauma counseling. Well, she ended up being arrested on the front line and said that she was treated better than the Native women. In fact, she was given a chair in the jail. The Native women had to sit on the ground.
Yes.
She was in jail for 3 days, along with most of the others who were arrested.
Yes.
They had to strip down to a single layer of clothing. So if it was a camisole, that's all they were allowed to wear.
Yes.
They asked to be given DNA swabs. Most of the people I've interviewed so far have been asked to do that, so in some cases forced. Angie said that Native women are fearful at this moment of talking.
Yes.
And what she's doing is trying to find the women who've been arrested and traumatized to bring them together in a circle. She's finding some of them alone in their cars and alone in tents, if they have the tents, because everything's been taken.
Yes.
And she said there's so much trauma and a lot of Native women are not ready to talk yet.
Yes. It's very emotional. It's very hard. I mean, if you see the men breaking down, you can see that. You seen that yesterday at the meeting.
Right.
Men were breaking down. Now, if the men are breaking down, then you know good and well that the women are having a hard time. And last night late, we stayed up at one of the camps and they fed us soup and it was a very traditional meal. One of the girls came up and I think she was about maybe 19. She's got a big old swollen eye. She's got a big shiner. I kind of think a little bit. I'm not a doctor, but it looked like her nose was broke. But she was very reserved. She was with her friends, but she was just like real jittery and looking and watching. And She's not going to be the same again. And so we sat her down and we fed her, and she felt better after she ate something she didn't eat. A lot of them are not eating. They're not coming out. They're isolating, you know. So they're having sweats. They asked for them to come to sweats. Well, they've had prayers for them at the center main fire. They've got tents up for counseling. I understand they've got masseuses for them to calm down and be able to sleep. We stayed up pretty late last night, and I'll tell you, there was quite a few of them that are walking around at night, and just like, they just don't know how to react, and so we're trying to bring them in, trying to talk to them and trying to work with them. And I, you know, some of the grandmas, I only talked to two of them last night late, but it's caused a trauma in them so bad that they have what they call the shakes now, you know, and that's very serious. Some are diabetics, you know. They didn't give them their medicine in there. Did some of them gotta have to have shots? Some of our youth, three of our youth diabetics, didn't get their shots, so they were close to diabetic comas. They were stripped, where they were shamed. They were not allowed food. They were given very little water, minimal water. And they were, not only the kennels were they using, but they were also using the carports where the big trucks go in, and had them all sit in there. Sometimes there was like over 80 of them. They said they were shoulder to shoulder. The thing of it is, they did not take the cuffs off. They left the cuffs on them sitting there, sometimes 6 hours. This was the report I received. That's cruel and inhumane treatment. That is horrible for our people to go through this. And then they were torturing them. We got reports that they're torturing them. Three of the main ones that I guess were on the front line verbal and yelling because they were taking down the older people, they were tortured.
What happened exactly?
They covered their faces and they poured water over them. This is horrible. And they chained them. They didn't just handcuff them. They had handcuffs already on them. They chained them to a post, like they're really going to run away. And they're tying their legs. I mean, this is inhumane. Even an animal gets better treatment. We don't do this. This is supposed to be some kind of a message to us. Well, we got it. And this is not going away. This is one of the things that I've been observing. I've been taking statements down, and we've been getting testimony, and we are looking at the situation in a different way. This is not going to go down easy. This is very serious. When it's not only Native people, but it's all nations that came to support us. And so this is really not, you know, when you look at it, this is not political in some sense, but in some sense it is. So it's not a good situation, but right now we're looking at several places, several charges. One of them is genocide, torture, and the other one is ecocide. Because they've already destroyed the lands. They've already destroyed graves, hundreds and hundreds of graves and sites, marking sacred sites. They've already dug those up. This is, like I said, this is going fast, very fast.
Today we are live in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm speaking with Jermaine Tremel, an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the United Nations. Her Lakota name is Lady Seen by Her Nation. She is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. Before Standing Rock, Jermaine did not talk about her lineage, but she's now talking about it, and I'll ask her about that in a couple of minutes. And we're talking about what happened on Thursday during the violent crackdown. 141 people were arrested, including elders. I have interviewed a number of young and older people who say that they were in jail for 3 days. They were forced to take a DNA swab, and In some cases, they weren't given food for hours. I did go to the Morton County Sheriff's Office yesterday and finally was able to speak with a spokesperson, Rob Keller, who said he knows nothing about the DNA swabs, knows nothing about it. I asked about the strip searches. He said that when you get into the orange jumpsuit, you obviously have to take off your clothing, and there are different procedures depending on what jail people are sent to. They're being sent all throughout the state of North Dakota because one jail cannot hold everyone. Over 400 people total have been arrested. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you want to know the latest about what's happening here, if you have a question for Jermaine Tremel, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about the media coverage that you've seen or maybe haven't seen? 866-798-8255. And if you work on human rights issues, what are your thoughts on the response on Thursday, but also just in the past, the crackdown on people here calling themselves water protectors? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jermaine, talk more about the burial sites and how things are moving so quickly, because when you're in the main camp, you see Humvees up on hills. And I also want to say, I did ask Rob Keller, why are police protecting the pipeline, police and military vehicles? And he said, well, it's private land. If you own a home and someone comes on your land, wouldn't you want protection? That was his response. Mm-hmm. So he said, what we're doing right now is protecting private land. And that also includes the Humvees that are up on the hills. But since last night, more activity has happened.
Yes, they're lining up. They're getting closer to the river, digging the river. They're getting ready to bore the hole under the river. Ready now. That's going to happen, I think, today or tomorrow. They're getting it all set up. The other thing is that they went through an ancient burial site, which we call the Turtle Shield. And the Turtle Shield is a very ancient turtle, and it's the medicine. We have a creation story of the giants, where their originations. And they've already destroyed several of those sites, okay, markings that were very, very close to our culture. And some of our teachings come from that. Some of our conduct and behavior and role come from that. And so that has been destroyed as of last night. They dug through all the way through. They're putting the pipe, they're welding the pipe all night. Okay, and what they're doing today, this morning, very early this morning, they had military planes going over. And those were Air Force. And we were asking why we don't have a private Cessna anymore now, and a helicopter. That's usually what we get all the time. It's just like a war zone, 24/7. They're over us. Well, all of a sudden now, we don't get the lights. We don't get no lights on the planes now. At the bottom of the planes, you can see the lights. We don't have that now.
How do you know they're Air Force?
You can see. I asked one of the guys, and we looked through binoculars. You can see that it was gray all under it, and it had an Air Force number. So that's been that only went around twice though this morning, but boy, I tell you, they were low. They were very low, and that's one of the things is that these airplanes are very low on us, and it's intimidating. You know, it's intimidating, and it's causing fear in the camp with the ones that have already been hurt. You know, they don't want to hear that, and then when you step off of the road. Off of a public highway, 1806, a gentleman said he went over there by the bridge to just look, and he went down in the ditch. And right away, the Humvees and all of them surrounded him and told him in a microphone, yelling at him, microphone, telling him, get off the land, get off, get away. You are not allowed here. This is private land. Excuse me, but that road is a public road. And on the sides of that road is public use too. But this is what they're doing. So they're policing all the way up and down that area where the pipes, where they're digging. And that's one of the things that we've noticed is that. The other thing is that now they've got brighter lights in the camp. If you sit there at night, it's just like you're under interrogation. It's lit up like a day. No.
We're going to take a quick break. Today we are live from Bismarck, North Dakota. We're about an hour from the main camp at Standing Rock. And today I'm joined by Jermaine Tremel, an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the United Nations. Jermaine is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. She grew up where Sitting Bull was killed on the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota. When we come back, we'll continue talking about the latest what's going on at Standing Rock, and we'll also talk about legal issues and the potential for lawsuits. And we'll also talk about President Obama's latest statement on Standing Rock. He's only made two very brief statements. He was asked questions. He was asked one question last night, and we'll talk about what he said. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can participate in the conversation on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can go to the yourcallradio.org website and leave a comment there. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. If you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone, call us toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are live from Bismarck, North Dakota. We're about an hour from the main camp at Standing Rock, and we're talking about the latest, what's happening after the crackdown on Thursday. Yesterday, I wanted to give you a visual because from home, it's kind of hard to visualize what's really happening here. Most of the pipeline at this point has been finished. If you saw the video of the mass arrests on Thursday, that section was right on the route of the pipeline, and the pipeline is now being protected by police and military vehicles on both sides, which means that water protectors cannot get to the pipeline. In the past, they would set up camp right along the pipeline and prevent workers from coming in to continue construction. That is no longer the case. At this point, a 20-mile section of the pipeline is at issue, and the Army Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction over that section. When I called the Army Corps, they sent me to the Department of Justice. They said that they are asking Energy Transfer Partners to voluntarily pause construction. We should also note that the original pipeline route was supposed to go north of Bismarck, which is 90% white. But when concerns were raised about potential water contamination, it was rerouted to the tribe's doorstep. And I have called the governor of North Dakota, Transfer Partners, Energy Transfer Partners, to find out why it was rerouted. I've asked the Army Corps and the DOJ, and I have not been able to get a specific answer about that. So if you have any questions about what's happening here, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on media coverage? 866-798-8255. We're joined today by Jermaine Tremel, an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the United Nations. She is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. Her Lakota name in English is Lady Seen by Her Nation. And now I would like to welcome Carol Muffett to the show. Carol is president of the Center for International Environmental Law. Five legal and advocacy organizations have warned the joint owners, Dakota Access Pipeline, of their legal responsibility amidst the escalating violence in Standing Rock. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Can you tell us about the letter that you have sent?
Yes, the letter that we sent to Energy Transfer Partners, to Phillips 66, to Enbridge Energy Partners, and to Wells Fargo Bank was designed to remind the companies and their investors of their legal obligations, both under U.S. law and under international human rights law, to respect and protect the human rights of the people on the ground. That those are both the rights of the indigenous peoples there, and the rights of the water protectors who are peacefully opposing the pipeline's construction. Our goal was to remind the companies of their legal obligations and the risks of violating those obligations in the event that there are continued human rights abuses.
And can you give us some information, elaborate on your response to what happened on Thursday? Again, you're president of the Center for International Environmental Law. What was your response when you saw the video of the violent crackdown on Thursday?
Well, I think, and this is one of the things that you'll find reflected in our letter. CL is an organization that has worked with frontline environmental defenders and human rights defenders around the world. In Guatemala, in Peru, in Kenya, and to see the abuses against protesters and water protectors playing out here in a way that parallels the egregious human rights abuses that we have seen, you know, in other countries around the world is deeply disturbing. And I think this is what prompted us and partners like Earth Rights International, which also advocates on behalf of communities, to speak out. You know, we fight these battles on behalf of communities in South America, in Central America. To see these same battles being fought in the same way here in the U.S. is deeply disturbing, and I wish it were more surprising.
Mm. And Jermaine, you do many missions overseas. You talk to people about genocide on the ground to get oral testimony.
Yes, yes.
And so what would you say in terms of the response, what you've seen overseas and what you're seeing here in North Dakota?
There's unfortunately some very strong parallels to some countries that I've been to. And it's sad because there's a lot of damage left behind, you know, and it's like a military, you know. And this is another thing that it's like you're using sheriff, you're using all the local, you know, and police force, you're using a private security, you're using dogs, you're using trained a very defunct, I might add, organization that has had a lot of abuse complaints on it, because the way they handle the dogs, or the way as handlers they have backgrounds, you know. So these are things that we're looking at, we're taking an assessment on this, and all of this is being documented. The reason is what we want to do, my group wants to do, is present a case to the World Court for an administrative intervention. This is very serious. And one of the things is that we need to have an intervention here. We're not in negotiation. We're not even in consultation.
Actually, today, Chairman Dave Archambault with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is reportedly meeting with executives from Energy Transfer Partners.
Yes, and I'm understanding that with that meeting, it's not a negotiation meeting, it's an informational meeting, and my understanding is that we have several UN organizations here that will be sitting here as witnesses, I'm understanding, and assessing the situation. We have Amnesty International also looking at the perimeter of how many police are out there. Like today, this morning, we have more people out there. We have more snipers out there. And so while this is going on, they want to meet on neutral ground, is my understanding. And they're going to talk to him. The one thing is that we're not in negotiation. And so one of the things is I understand we do have a mediator on the ground. We met Stephanie, I think it is, mm-hmm. The other day. And what she said was her role here was to just make sure that the ones that got jailed and that they got their stuff back, their personal property back. Many of them didn't get their personal property back. So they were bringing things back, even as of yesterday.
I met people who, in fact, I interviewed Carol Madsen today. She's almost 70, and she has pneumonia.
Yes.
Because she's been so cold. She's been camping here for 3 weeks and was on the cell of the floor of the jail, which
yes.
is very cold. She doesn't even have her ID or her mm-hmm. Medicare card.
Yes. She
still has not received that back from the jail.
There's a lot of things that haven't, just like you and I saw driving by, the piles of what they did with the stuff. And the purses, there's people missing their medicines, there are people missing their IDs, their phones. I mean, this is, and the only thing that is said back to us Maybe you'll get it.
Carol, what about that? What is done with this kind of testimony? I went to the sheriff's office yesterday and finally was able to get an interview with a public spokesman, Rob Keller, who said that there are no snipers. He said on the front lines on Thursday, it was police, sheriffs from at least five states. He said North Dakota is putting a call out to the rest of the country for police departments to come assist. He said more than five states, but wouldn't give me a number. So what is being done with this information?
One of the things that I would highlight is that the engagement of the police does not reduce the responsibility of the companies for their own role in these abuses. And I think with respect to the testimony, I think this is one of the values of the international human rights processes. So I know that a thematic hearing has been requested before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights next month. And the value of these processes is they provide communities with the opportunity to present precisely this sort of testimony. Our experience is that in cases involving the criminalization of peaceful protest, in cases involving the criminalization of land rights defenders around the world, official testimony from the police is valuable, but it's not always reliable. It's important to recognize that enforcement authorities, their job is to keep the peace, but they often bring their own perspectives and their own institutional and governmental interest into the information they're providing. And so the opportunity to provide testimony in an independent forum is, I think, quite important.
And so what happens from here, Carol?
I think that I think we, like others, are watching the developments very carefully. One of the things that we have highlighted in our cautionary letter and our warning to the companies is that from here many things could happen. To the extent that the human rights abuses continue, complaints can be brought before the Inter-American Commission, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, but they can also be brought before U.S. courts. And this is one of the things that we've really highlighted is that we tend to forget in the United States that we have human rights. Everyone thinks that we only have the Constitution. But the protesters, the water protectors at Standing Rock, they are human beings with fundamental human rights, just like people around the world have them. And one of the ways to protect human rights in the U.S. is through the law of tort. And so even as they pursue actions before international bodies and international mechanisms, it is also possible that the people who are being abused, the people who have been injured, the people whose rights have been violated, can sue these companies in U.S. court under the completely mundane law of torts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carol Muffett, thank you for joining us, and we will definitely follow this and check in with you in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. That is Carol Muffett, attorney with the Center for International Environmental Law. That organization and law firm, along with four others, sent a letter. They've warned Energy Transfer Partners, the company that owns the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline, Phillips 66, which will have a 25% stake in it, and lender Wells Fargo, of their corporate duty. They say that under international law, they must protect proponents of the pipeline from human rights abuses. And joining me here in studio in Bismarck, North Dakota, is Jermaine Tremel. Jermaine is an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the UN. Jermaine is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. Her Lakota name is Lady Seen by Her Nation. Jermaine, what is your Lakota name?
In Lakota, we say "Taoya te wayanka biwi," is how we say it in Lakota.
And "Lady Seen by Her Nation," what's the significance of that?
My grandmother's was in the Battle of Little Bighorn, and she went out there and she counted coup because her brother was one of the main warriors leading a flank, and he was wounded, and so she went out there and rescued him. And she brought him back, and then she went back and counted coup on a soldier that did this to him. And so with that, she brought that coup back to the people.
And for people who don't know what coup is?
Counting coup is when you take your staff of eagle feathers and you just touch them. And what that represents is that you took their spirit. You don't have to physically kill them. And when you take their spirit, they don't have nothing to live for. They're already gone, see? So that's how that's done.
Well, we've got a number of phone calls, and then we'll end by talking about why you decided to talk about your connection to Sitting Bull. Okay. People have been waiting patiently. Thank you. Susie's calling from South Dakota, I think. Susie, hi. Welcome to the show.
San Diego, actually.
San Diego. Okay, hi.
I wish I was there. I could be probably more of use. But anyway, first of all, thank you, Rose. Thank you for your panel, for everyone on the show, for all that you're doing to address this cause. Your tenacity is so appreciated. Again, I'm in San Diego, so what can I can't physically go to where, to Standing Rock, so what can I do to contribute to all of your efforts?
A lot of people have this question. Let's actually take a few more callers, and then Jermaine will respond. Let's go to Anthony in San Francisco. Hi, Anthony.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all that you're doing towards this cause. And I am so sorry this is happening, but I believe that this is not just a Indian fight. This is a humanitarian fight. I think these things are not going to stop, and it's going to get worse. And if we don't put a stop to it, can you imagine what's going to happen next? I'm like you, your first caller there. I don't know what to do, and I'm a little paralyzed here because we're also a little slave to the system here. I have to go to work and support my family. I want to go up to the front line there, and I want to protest with you all. And I just can't be imprisoned. I can't be beaten. I can't lose my job here. And I just think that there ought to be a way that we have some type of rally for the humans to get together to stop this, because this is something that I think will explode into something huge, and these people will be unstoppable. If we don't stand up now, and even if there's a tort case, these guys will gladly pay for damages. It's nothing to them. This is a humanistic human rights issue, and we all as human beings need it from every country and every
Well, thank you, Anthony. Sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. And people standing in solidarity actually shut down Grand Central Station in New York City yesterday.
Yes, they did.
There's rallies happening across the country. San Francisco just a couple of days ago. And then one more question, Jermaine, and then you can respond. Let's go to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert.
Oh, hi. Yes. I just wanted to say, as a white male of Northern European descent, I profusely apologize for the behaviors that my race has done to Native peoples, not only in this country but all around the world. And you know, I've posted I've shared the postings from the Indigenous people on Facebook, and also signed petitions to Obama to stop this nonsense, this horror that's happening up there. And again, I'm just another person far away who can't go there, who would like to know what more we can do.
Thank you. A lot of phone calls and emails, Jermaine, people mm-hmm. who say they can't make it here physically. What can they do from home?
Well, one of the things is that we ask that, you know, if you have rallies or if you have internet, put the word out, put the message out, share whatever you can do. Just pass the word and make sure everybody knows what's going on, because one of the things is that we're being made look like the bad person here. Our water protectors are good people. They come from diverse backgrounds. But the thing of it is that when the invite was put out to Standing Rock, they came. And that's where we're happy for that. We want that. We do need bodies. We do need help. We need voices to say we all need the same thing. Say the same thing. Those things is protect the water. Mini Wichoni, water is the land, the ground is sacred. We need to all be saying that. But if you have senators, you have congressmen, you go to them, pass those resolutions, push those resolutions, and put pressure on in that political system. That's how you can do it. because some of us, we believe that the system doesn't work a different way. We're going to push it. We're going to pressure. We ask that you write letters to your senators. We ask that you see your aldermen, see your city council, and pass resolutions in support and solidarity of our people.
In terms of the legal aspects, Jermaine, what could be done at this point? President Obama was asked about this last night by the news outlet Now This. They put together a lot of online videos. And President Obama said, quote, "We're monitoring this closely. My view is that there is a way for us to accommodate sacred lands of Native Americans. I think that right now the Army Corps is examining whether there are ways to reroute this pipeline," end quote.
This is the thing. It's still going to go under the river. It's still going to go under Missouri River, no matter which way you put it. They've already destroyed how many, 20 miles now they've already destroyed.
We're seeing, we just drove long highways. You see, there's dirt that's dug for the pipeline. It's almost like a long water slide. That's kind of what it looks like.
Yes.
And the pipeline is being put in, and they're working nonstop.
Yep. And this is the thing is that when they finish, you know, what they're trying to do and what Obama's saying is that this is not the end. They're almost done. They're getting ready to drill the main hole under the river to lay the pipeline down. The thing of it is that once that pipeline, and this is the thing that people need to understand, is that what the company has done, the company that builds that pipeline, these are all involved in this. Okay, this is the thing. Not only the banks that funded all this, but you got board members there. You got to look at those. Send those letters in. Put that pressure on them. The other thing is that we know for a fact that pipeline is busting up and down this Missouri River, you see. And we as a people, we know that this water is going to be contaminated very shortly if this goes in. No matter which way you reroute it, it's not going to change nothing. What we want is that there be no pipeline in that Missouri River, period. That's why we're saying it's non-negotiable. This is how we stand. We are water protectors. We are people of the Standing Rock. We've been through this before. They flooded us out. They took our water from us. We know what it's like at one time to be without water. But we're not only doing this for us. We're doing this for everybody, because already, if you see a lot of the rivers, a lot of the aquifers, they're contaminated, and people can't drink the water. Where are you going to get the water? This is one of the things that we say is on the front lines. That's why we're praying. Those people that are standing there against us, hitting us, beating us, knocking us down, they have to drink water too. And so we're in this together. So when we say we're praying for them, we say that we're doing these things, we're praying for even them. And a lot of people have a hard time with that. But we have to, because they're going to drink the water too. They're going to know. Their children's children, just like ours, is going to know. But from a legal standpoint, there's claims that are going to be made now. Okay. One of them is that the abuse, the human rights abuse, but also the one thing that we want to declare is that a moratorium from the grandmothers of what we call the Ocheti Shakoi, the grandmothers of the Ocheti of Standing Rock, we want to demand a moratorium be put on the Missouri River up and down from extraction and anything within that river. That's what we want to declare as grandmothers for our future. We want that moratorium in there. And this is one of the things that we're going to demand.
Because at this point, we're talking about a 20-mile section, right?
Yes.
Going under the Missouri River, which provides drinking water to 18 million people, and it's the tribe's main source of water.
Yes.
Again, it was supposed to go north of Bismarck. That was the initial plan. That area is 90% white.
Yes.
The Bismarck Tribune reports that when there were concerns about the water, the pipeline was rerouted to go to the tribe's doorstep. And I can't get anybody to talk about this and why this decision was made.
That pipeline is in a treaty territory. That's 1851 treaty territory. That treaty is a peace treaty. That was not a land cession.
What did that treaty say exactly?
That we had peace between our areas, that the area goes all the way up past Mandan here. And that's all 1851, all the way down. And it covers all the Missouri River. What it says is that it was a peace treaty to have peaceful relations between the non-natives, the whites, and us, and have passage through this that territory of what was known as the Great Sioux Nation. So that's what we're looking at. So even that pipeline coming down from the Balkan is within treaty territory. Where they're putting, laying this thing in the water, we have 1868 treaty. Okay, 1868 says we have both sides of the, both banks of the river on the 1868. So here is agencies of energy transfer and their agents, and you got all these pipe builders now violating a very powerful treaty that was made. And the state is actually a third party. They cannot intervene. They cannot be a part of it. So they are also in total violation of the 1851 treaty.
Jermaine, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I really wanted to ask you your personal story about what it's been like for you to be here. And when I met you, when I came about 3 weeks ago, you said that your family never really talked about your connection to Sitting Bull. Why here and why now?
Well, as they say, some of us say history repeats itself. And so we're taking this as a sign, but there's a prophecy about our people. And the prophecy is coming back. The prophecy is coming true that the children will lead. And when this started, it was our children that stood up and said, no more, no more. Enough is enough. We're going to do this. We're going to take it. And so what happened is when we were told is that when the prophecy comes true, that we now know who's who. And so we are now to publicly say who we are. The reason why we kept it hidden for so long is that they were killing us. Because we were known as Sitting Bull's descendants. And so we conquered the 7th Cavalry. And so with that, there was a fear. So we hid it. We kept it hidden.
And how does it feel for you to now be introduced as the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull?
It's a different feeling. I'm very proud and happy, you know, that we came this far. We're growing. Our family's growing. And my grandchildren are all on the front lines, and I'm very proud of them. They took a stand like their grandfather did and wouldn't accept anything from the government. And so we're still standing that way, too. Thank you.
Jermaine Tremel is an international lawyer under the Genocide Commission with the United Nations. Her Lakota name in English means lady seen by her nation. Jermaine is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. She grew up where Sitting Bull was killed on the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota. And we have been live here in Bismarck, North Dakota, about an hour from the main camp at Standing Rock. And I will be here throughout the week filing reports. You can check my Facebook page, videos, photos, just interviews with people about why they have come to camp in the cold. It just keeps getting colder, and their plan is to stay through the winter. Jermaine, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about key down ballot races. Whoever controls the House and the Senate determines what the president can do. Elections are being held in 34 states for Senate seats. 435 seats in the House are up for grabs. So what races should we be watching closely? Join us live at 10 a.m. with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.